Hey, this is Russell, and I work at the video store, the place that we can go to every week when it's movie night. On days like today, when the store is quiet, I get to chat to my friends about the films and the series that we're loving. All right, let's do it. Let's open up the shop.
Did you see that thing yesterday on the TV?
How's it?
Good morning.
Good morning, Rusky.
How you guys doing?
I'm good, dude. How are you doing?
I'm lekker, man.
Nice.
Welcome to the video store. Thank you for wandering in. It's a little quiet now. And so myself, Graham, and Gad are going to have ourselves a fat chat. We're going to catch up about all the movies and the series that we're watching. Yep. Graham, you are an editor.
Correct.
And very much the producer of the show. We're not doing a shift here at the video store. Gaddy, you make great candy.
Oh, I make candy. Thank you for saying it's great.
It is great. Gaddle's Candy Company. We stock it here at the Bioscope. And you're also in Short Straw with me.
Mm. I am.
You slap the keys.
Slap the keys.
Tickle the ivory, so to speak. And my name is Russell. I am the owner of the Bioscope, which is an independent cinema here in Johannesburg. And also a member of the band Short Straw with old Gaddy. But yeah, we have come together here to work at the video store. And we hopefully can figure out what you can watch.
Oh.
We're going to have ourselves a fat chat. We always kick things off usually with a little round of, hey, did you guys see?
Oh, yes.
Which is a nice little way to catch up on some news.
Yeah.
Do we have anything to share?
Hey, did you guys see the final Snow White live action trailer?
I did.
Should have been a Halloween release.
I must say, I'm not wildly excited.
Yeah, I'm pretty indifferent.
Yeah.
I know some people are like outraged.
I'm just surprised they're still doing these. I don't know.
It's because they make so much money.
Yeah.
People always there's this online space where people complain about them. But clearly out in the real world, people are watching them and they're making billions of dollars.
No, of course they are. I guess the number one question sometimes with these older stories is, do we still need them?
Yeah.
You know, are they important? Just because they're an old story and they've been around,
yes,
doesn't necessarily mean we need to keep telling it.
Exactly.
Unless it proves a great moral or lesson. Like Beauty and the Beast was a lovely lesson that was an original intended story to help girls know that, you know, they got to look past what their husband looks like, and they got to love what's on the inside. And that was quite revolutionary at the time.
Nice.
Some of these others are a little weird and rapey. Like you kind of, do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
They're a little Bill Cosby, if I dare say.
Do they do a live action Sleeping Beauty?
No, there was a Cinderella, and there's now Snow White. No one's touching Sleeping Beauty.
It was Kenneth Branagh.
For a very good reason. Because you shouldn't kiss a girl when she's sleeping.
Coming out in 2030, Song of the South, live action.
Could you imagine? But okay, I will say one thing for Snow White. It doesn't look like they're just doing a copy-paste. It looks like they're kind of changed things. Yeah, exactly. Okay. Which is like, at least that gives it a little something.
So either you do it exactly the same and people get upset, or you change things and people get upset.
Exactly.
No, I'm not. I must say, I'm not too interested in the sort of upsetness of it all.
No.
It's also, there's just a huge question, which is like, why?
Yeah.
And was it necessary?
Yes.
And also, like, who can be hotter than Gal Gadot? Do you know what I mean? Who can be fairer? Who can be the fairest and prettiest? Anyways, hey, did you guys see that Severance season 2? Has got itself a release date. Mm. Yeah.
Nice.
Mm. Great poster that I saw.
Yeah. So it's coming on the 17th of Jan.
Right.
And this is Apple TV Plus. Yeah. Did you guys get into Severance?
Mm-mm.
It is a TV show.
I watched two episodes. I need to finish it. It was cool.
Two episodes might not have been enough. It was a very cerebral, both literally and figuratively, TV show that certainly was not second screen stuff.
Right.
It was very, very odd. Very had a very kind of clear visual design to it, and it really held you and left you on this like sort of very real cliffhanger. So, but then it's been quite a while since then, and so I hope people care.
I know Ben Stiller did a few. Did he direct all of them?
He directed like a big chunk of it. I think he was really much behind it. The weird back of the box is that we're in the kind of near future, somewhat near future, where you can opt to have this augmentation to your brain where your work life can be completely separated from your personal life. So that when you sort of enter the lift of your office, when you work down there, you literally almost are like hypnotized. You sort of changed and you forget.
Okay.
And so you lead these like two lives. It's not in the whole world.
Yeah.
This is like the first program of it. And so it exists out in the world that people know this is happening at this company. Mm. And there almost seemed a little of a sort of abomination. Not an abomination, but it's like it's
frowned upon.
Yeah, the people in this kind of town or city are sort of find it a bit weird that someone sort of chosen to do this.
Right.
Then what they do when they're down there seems like a very odd thing. They sort of are almost playing this like sort of screensaver-ish game. It looks like it's something in the sort of 80s.
Okay.
And he can't figure out like what he actually does. And it's almost like his brain... He's been sort of hypnotized to sort of not question what he does down there.
Okay.
And then it slowly uncovers, and then there's this, at the end of the season one, there's this way in which he can kind of break the one world into the other to sort of expose something bad happening.
Right.
It's quite convoluted.
Okay.
But it's cool.
Cool.
It's got a vibe.
Does it lend itself to a season two?
Very much so, but now in my head I'm like, I've got to remember what the fuck happened in season one.
Yes,
like I need to rejig my memory.
Might be a good time to rewatch. Well,
So if you haven't gotten into it, get into it now.
Yes, cool. Do I have anything? Hey, did you guys see the trailer for Invincible season 3?
Okay,
we had the little teaser trailer thing before, which was like the little meta trailer.
Is
like
proper
they did.
Trailer now?
Yeah, just came out yesterday. It looks pretty cool.
Yeah, that's a great show.
Yeah, it is a good show. Super well made. Great cast.
This is over on Amazon.
Amazon, yeah.
Okay, and it's an animated show.
Yep.
It's all about superheroes.
Makes the boys look like a Disney movie.
I guess it's all the things that you can do with animation.
Yeah, you can draw anything.
Okay, it's very violent.
Super violent, yes.
Okay, so it is certainly not for kids.
No.
No.
Definitely not.
Okay, and it was based off books.
Yeah, it's based on a comic book by the same guy who did Walking Dead, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. A different artist, but the same writer.
Okay.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Robert Kirkman.
Robert Kirkman, that's his name.
Yeah.
Yeah. Looks good, though.
Okay. And you're there for it?
Yeah. It's out next year, January or February, I think.
Mm. Okay. Yeah. Did we speak about Thunderbolts? Did you guys see the Thunderbolts trailer?
No, we didn't talk about it, but I did see the trailer.
So, I like comics, but like Marvel is very... annoying for me most of the time.
Yeah.
But Thunderbolts was one of the few Marvel comics that I actually loved.
Okay.
But they've literally just taken the name Thunderbolts, and none of the actual characters from the Thunderbolts in the comics are in the team. But I think that the basic concept of Thunderbolts were they were a group of superheroes who were actually secretly supervillains.
Mm.
So they just the world saw them as heroes, but they had this whole plot.
Right.
To take over, like, while disguised as heroes. And I'm assuming that's what the point of the movie is. Otherwise, why would they call it Thunderbolts?
Who knows?
Yeah.
I just don't know. Yeah, I don't know if Marvel plays things that way. Because most of the characters aren't, like, bad guys. You know? I don't know what to make of it. Especially since it's actually called Thunderbolts asterisk. It's a little asterisk on the name.
Yeah, no one knows yet.
Is that in the name?
Yes.
Yeah.
Like, and they've said it'll make sense once you see the movie.
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay, but you were there for the comics, Getty.
Yeah. No, they were great. It was such a different approach to comic storytelling when Thunderbolts came out. It was like a breath of fresh air. It was like funny. It had like that Deadpool kind of quirkiness.
But in the comic books, it's called Thunderbolts because there's a connection to the character Thunderbolt Ross, isn't it?
Yeah, he's got something to do.
Yeah, and he's not in the movie.
Who's the president? Who does Harrison Ford play?
So Harrison Ford does play that character, but in the new Captain America.
Yes, he's the Red Hulk.
I don't think he's in Thunderbolts, yeah.
That was a cool reveal in the trailer.
But there's a guy, I saw this on the internet, there's at the end of the Thunderbolts trailer, they spot a dude, and if you know who he is, that's important.
Yeah.
He's quite a hectic villain. Yeah, does that make sense? Do you know who that is?
Can't specifically remember.
I can't remember his name. Marvel has several characters that are basically plays on Superman. He's one of those. He's like a Superman type. But he's more of a villain.
You're talking about, yeah.
I can't remember his name.
It's right at the end of the trailer. Yes. Florence Pugh like sort of catches him with a flashlight.
Yes.
And he sort of says his name.
Yeah.
And it's one of those like it means nothing to the general public.
Exactly.
But to a few people they're like, oh my God, it's that guy.
Yeah. Not Ultraman.
No, it's not Ultraman. Ultraman is from DC.
Okay. But yeah, I think that's it. Do we have any other sort of big news?
Not really, no.
No, I don't think so.
I think that's one thing is important to mention is that we are screening Kneecap here at the Bioscope. We had ourselves the first of our two advanced screenings.
Mm.
In the week that this episode is coming out, we have a second one that is on Wednesday.
Cool.
Thereafter, from this Friday onwards, it's in more cinemas in South Africa, including the Bioscope. Kneecap is very cool. It's the biopic about an Irish hip hop group called Kneecap.
Okay,
but they play themselves in the movie, and so they're a real life band. You can check them out on Spotify. They're playing Coachella next year. And they're very cool because they are rapping in Irish Gaelic.
Oh.
And so they have so much sort of context and politics and interesting shit behind them because in Ireland, to speak Irish is very, you know, you're very proud and you want to be Irish as opposed to Northern Ireland, which is still, as a result at the end of the war, still part of the United Kingdom.
Yeah.
And so there's a big fight to try and keep the Irish language alive, but it's for the most part very much dying in the world. Mm. And so it was very cool that these guys were rapping in Irish Gaelic.
Mm.
And it's kind of made that whole language and that whole kind of culture cool again.
Okay.
And it's a fucking awesome movie.
Yeah, I've heard it's great.
It's just got that.
So it's
punk
not a documentary,
spirit.
It's made. As a like a,
it's made as a fiction film with, you know, scenes, dialogue, everything. It's their story. It's as if someone had written it as a narrative film. It just happens to be them acting themselves.
Okay. It actually just won some awards. I can't remember what it was for. I just saw like a headline for
it. No, it's doing very well because it's a very well-made film. Nice. It's just done well, and
is it an Irish director, writer?
I would imagine. I don't know the context of the director himself.
Okay.
But it's touted to be, you know, best international film at the Oscars. Nice. There's a few that are really great this year, but this one is in the running.
Okay, nice.
So it's Kneecap over at the Bioscope.
Okay.
And
nice.
I think the Bioscope's just the right place to watch it.
It seems bioscopy.
It is bioscopy. And so that is going to be my sort of constant effort and battle or challenge or objective is to find the right films that are perfect for a cinema, but specifically my cinema.
Yeah.
You know, something like the Thunderbolts or some of those bigger movies, for example, you want to see them on IMAX.
Yes.
And I get it. You want to go to an IMAX and see that huge, crazy thing. But there are some films that deserve to be on cinema that are perfect for cinema, but it can be a smaller cinema.
Yeah.
Speaking of which, I think that movie is here.
Nice.
Okay. The movie here. So let's get into it.
Okay.
All right. So myself and G-Force went to go watch it last week.
Yes.
It is now in cinemas. This is a movie that is getting a little lust in the world. Gaddy, do you know about Here?
Yeah.
Okay. So this is Robert Zemeckis. He's the director.
Yep.
This is Tom Hanks. This is Robin Wright.
Yeah.
So this is basically the same cast as Forrest Gump.
And the same screenwriter.
Yeah. Same music. So it's an incredible film. It's based off a not necessarily widely known, but a very celebrated, not even a graphic novel. It's considered an art book.
Yeah,
I've heard of this. I've seen images of it.
Richard Maguire wrote this, or painted and illustrated this book. Mm. It was originally only like a few frames, like 6 or 9 frames, and then it got expanded into a much sort of heartier book.
Okay.
But basic concept of this movie is that the whole movie is about one plot of land.
Yeah.
And quite specifically, one view on that plot of land. So this is from the dawn of civilization, like the dinosaurs, to the Ice Age, to Native Americans wandering through a beautiful forest to colonization, but most specifically and for the majority of the movie, it's the story of this family that have lived in this house, and this plot of land has been on there. And we watch Tom Hanks grow up as like a young boy, young man, who eventually meets Robin Wright, gets her pregnant. They end up living in this house. But what the movie does is it never moves from one view looking at this room. And I think that's when I've tried to explain it to people. At that point, I think I lose them because then they go, oh, this is arty.
Right.
It's like, it's a great concept until I say, like, it's one locked off shot. And then they go, oh, fuck.
Yeah.
But let me tell you, that part's not an issue at all. At least not for me.
Yeah.
And what happens is, Gad, there's this lovely device where through these little squares and editing, they take you into these other times.
So is it going back and forth?
So it's going backwards and forward. Okay, so it's like, for example, a good example is like in the one scene, if it's 4th of July and there's fireworks, then you'll see... It'll cut to all the other times like fireworks have gone off in that in that space. And you follow a few different stories. Because this is what I think to me is I've always found this very fascinating is time and space and place and how a place could have a meaning.
Yeah.
And how in your house you know, who lived in your house before? What did they do? What kind of people were they? They had their whole other life. You know, there's something quite magical to think about that. So in this living room, you know, you go back to like a pilot at the start of flying.
Must be like early 20s or something.
Yeah, when they'd first invented the airplane, and this guy is getting excited about air travel. Yeah. And then there's another dude who's inventing the Lazy Boy.
Yes.
And you really come to know these characters. And what's also lovely about this and why the locked off shot really works well is that it feels like you're in a play. It feels like you're watching a play to some large degree. And as a result of that, and as a result of just the beauty of this kind of single frame, is my argument as to why you need to watch it in a theater. You need that theater environment, I think. I think on your TV, it's not going to cut it.
Because
there's something beautiful and majestic about seeing this single frame, and especially like with the Native Americans, that part, it felt like we were at the, remember what I told you, the Natural History Museum. It felt like we were looking into these sort of dioramas, which are these like worlds that they've created at the very famous Natural History Museum in New York.
Mm-hmm.
So I loved it.
Yeah.
G-Force?
I liked it more than I thought I was going to like it. Because Robert Zemeckis has had a lot of misses.
Yeah, so
a lot of big misses.
He takes a lot of risks.
Yeah,
he loves does take risks.
That motion capture stuff,
and it doesn't always work.
I was about to say, I kind of needed our chats, because in the past we've spoken about this. I'd never really thought about it, but you were the first to mention the fact that Zemeckis is very quick to take up interesting, bold, technological swings.
Yeah, he seems to often get more, he seems to be more interested in the technology than the movie
some
of the time. Polar Express is a perfect example of that. Not a great movie, but it is like, as an experiment, it's interesting, and it did lead to a lot of other things, you know, in terms of its performance capture and all that sort of thing.
It's almost like he's willing to sort of take one for the team just to sort of do it.
Yes.
You know? He didn't make Beowulf, did he?
Yeah, he did Beowulf.
He did,
And the new Pinocchio.
That was dreadful.
I couldn't even.
It was bad. Wow, shockingly bad. Considering like the fact that he's a really experienced and director who should know better. But in this case, I think the thing that he's playing with is like the de-aging technology.
Yes.
Because apparently some of that, at least to an extent, some of that's actually done real time. Like they're doing that real time on set.
Yeah, Tom Hanks said that they were doing that. Okay, yeah. So as I said, you're watching all these beautiful pockets of time, and think of the movie as almost being these portals that take you sort of backwards and forwards as little parts of the frame sort of appear and then open up as if you transporting backwards and forwards in time. And we see a very young Tom Hanks and a young Robin Wright getting together, and they used this technology, effectively deepfake, to do it.
I think it's okay. we've seen, you know, Marvel does this all the time with de-aging because they have the same actors all the time. So they've de-aged Robert Downey Jr. and Michael Douglas and all these guys. And whoever does their stuff does it a lot better, to be honest. I found the de-aging in this. Oddly enough, the de-aging didn't look as bad as, like, the aging effects. I thought when they aged the characters up, they looked so much worse. I feel like that should be, like, a thing we have a handle on. Was that also done digitally? I don't know. That's the thing. I think some of that may have been done practically. But I found, for some reason, I feel like that's a technology we should have, like, a grasp on by now because we've been doing it for decades.
Yeah.
But it looked really bad, especially on the, like you said, like these Native American characters.
Oh, yeah. I did find...
Wow, that looked bad. That was like...
Yeah.
Oof.
That was the one that wasn't great.
But I think, yeah, that's the thing that kind of kept pulling me out of it every now and then is the house itself, which is obviously a set, looks fine. Like, that looks pretty great. It just looks like a house, which is what you want. But every time we're cutting to something where the house hasn't been built yet, it looks so artificial. Everything just looks like it's been photoshopped.
Sure. I think there was a lot of that. And of course, it was, you know, magnified on this big screen in order to see it. And I get that. But to me, it was all tastefully enough done that it wasn't that much of an issue. But to me, overwhelmingly, and this is something perhaps we can talk about, is that it was a vibe movie.
It's a real slice of life kind of movie.
Yeah, it wasn't this like plot to plot, action consequences, you know, action adventure. It was just a vibe, and you've got to be in that vibe to appreciate this kind of movie.
Yeah,
and those come around every so often, and you just, you know, if you're in the right place, if you sort of see the world in the right, in a similar way, it's a frequency. It's like if you're in line with that frequency, then this movie is for you.
What was that? The later Terrence Malick movie with Brad Pitt.
Oh, Tree of Life.
Yeah,
Tree of Life. Is it that kind of vibe? Because I haven't seen.
Well,
that either.
No. I mean,
when we talk about vibes.
In terms of vibes, yes. In a sense of that, where it's like it's going to go at a particular pace, and it's going to. It's just something that you've got to be relaxed to watch.
I think it's more cohesive than something like Tree of Life, though.
Despite
the fact that you're jumping back and forth between time and jumping to other characters that aren't related to this, like the main through line of Tom Hanks and Robert Penn. Robin Wright. It used to be Robin Wright Penn. It's surprisingly cohesive, despite the fact that we're jumping back and forth and going to other characters and that sort of thing, which I think Tree of Life kind of meanders a lot more.
No, Tree of Life is arty.
Yes.
It's full on fucking arty. Yeah. It's like a music video in the sense that it's just this whimsical movement. And that also, it's a good reference because that does involve dinosaurs.
Yeah. Some of the tangents I feel like I could have done without. Like the stuff that's jumping back to like Benjamin Franklin. I'm like, what does this have to do with anything else that's happening?
Sure. But I think what was important was that, you know, there were these like huge historical figures that that bumbled past this property of land. Do you know what I mean? This was where his bastard son lived. And so Benjamin Franklin sort of traversed the land that you're now on. I think it's more about that.
Because I found like for the most part, the ones that we go back and forth to are, like, there's a real thematic consistency across the whole thing.
Sure.
You know, and, like, they're kind of adding to the story. Like, there's always, like, essentially a story of a couple.
Yeah.
You know, which the Benjamin Franklin one doesn't really do. That's why it felt distant for me.
There are these lovely kind of touch points, Gad. Like, and it sort of just shows you how we're also living in history now. Because the most modern family has got these like two or three important moments. The one was when the like house cleaner just realizes she can't smell.
Yes.
And you're like, it's such a subtle way of going like, this is COVID.
Yeah.
Like we're now hitting the historical touch point of COVID.
But then they also tie that back into an older story. The story about the pilot.
Oh, how so?
Right. Well. Okay.
Oh yeah.
Okay. I don't know if we want to talk about spoilers. It's not really like a plot-driven movie. So it's not a spoiler. But the whole time is like this dude is obsessed with flying and his wife hates it because she thinks he's going to die in a plane crash.
Yeah.
And then we learn he has died and we're like, oh, he must have died in a plane crash. And then we learn he died of flu. And then there's a scene where you, like the shot is like behind these two guys and they're talking about it. And the guy says, no, it was the influenza that killed him. And they turn to face each other and they're wearing masks. And it's just like that cyclical repeating nature
of it. It's smart.
Yeah.
It's a smart movie. I loved it.
Yeah.
I really thought it was great. I know Perrin didn't.
Yes.
Wasn't wowed about it, but I know that Perrin put on his eye patch and watched it at home. So it's like, yeah.
Yeah.
Lovely. No, I think here, so the movie's here, H-E-R-E. It's in cinemas.
No.
Come watch it at the Bioscope if you can. It's just, I think it's a beautiful piece of art that isn't arty.
Yeah.
That's the lovely part about it, is that it's not this challenging, ethereal, you know, piece of sort of quite strange art like Tree of Life, which is the film that we're saying it kind of is similar to in some essence.
Yeah.
It's a very accessible piece of art.
Yes, definitely. I think it is. Accessible is a good word for it.
Yeah. Okay. Lovely.
Yeah.
Another big thing to chat about. Oh, actually, let's stay in movies.
Okay.
Just to mention the fact that I watched the movie Nutcrackers.
Okay.
Which is over on Disney Plus. This is a Ben Stiller film.
Okay.
That has come in time for the holidays in some regard. It is not a holiday movie.
Oh, right.
In that sense, it's interesting. It's he is a sort of big shot Okie from the big city. He finds out his sister has died, and he now has to look after, or his sister and brother-in-law, and he now has to look after their four boys.
Okay.
In this kind of rural farm. And it's classic, you know how it's going to work out. But the movie is done in a way that is certainly trying to not be too cookie cutter and not be too typical Christmas movie or whatever. Okay. It's
or handheld.
Yeah, no, in that regard, it's very natural acting and natural moments.
Okay.
It's David Gordon Green, who has done a lot of sort of slightly more indie, slightly more art housey. Okay. But he's also done big stuff. He was Pineapple Express and that Halloween, the more sort of modern Halloween reboot films.
Yes.
But they definitely tried to make it a more quirky indie film.
Okay.
It's almost like a sort of Christmas holiday lovable film, but in a sort of indie outfit.
Right.
So that part sort of makes it a little confused. You don't quite know which kind of movie you're watching.
Oh, right.
But it's got a little bit of everything.
Okay.
It's not shit. It's not amazing. Okay. But yeah, Nutcrackers is certainly a little bit of a holiday film.
All right, cool.
Should we chat about TV shows?
Let's do that.
Skeleton Crew.
Okay.
I've been waiting for this for ages.
Yeah.
Tell me about it.
Okay.
It's the new Star Wars show.
Yeah.
So it's set in the same period as The Mandalorian and Ahsoka and all these TV shows.
Yeah.
So it's between the two trilogies. Return of the Jedi ends, and then this period happens, and then the new movies kind of happen. So this is set in between there.
Yeah.
But this is totally separate. There's basically no mention of any characters that have ever been kind of mentioned before.
Because it's a big fucking galaxy, man.
Exactly,
Yeah. It's on a planet no one's heard of before.
Yeah.
And Jude Law as maybe a Jedi. We don't know yet.
Yeah.
It's great. It's like shot in this like very nostalgic Goonies type. Yeah. It's like focused on emblems, so like E.T. and Goonies and like that sort of feel.
It's kids.
Yes. So
it's kids like, having an adventure.
Basically, back of the box is a bunch of kids who all go to the same school, find a buried spaceship that they accidentally activate, and it just autopilots off the planet. So they have
with them on it.
Yes.
Oh, cool.
So they have no idea where they are. They're lost. It's four kids lost in space, basically.
Okay.
Going on a Star Wars adventure.
It's funny that you bring up Goonies. I was rewatching it over the weekend.
Oh, really?
I've seen parts of it as a kid.
Yeah.
Well, not as a kid. Like across my life, I've seen bits of it, and we've screened it often at the Bioscope. Mm-hmm. But I've never like watched it from start to finish.
It's a very odd movie.
It's a weird movie.
Yeah.
And I was like, I have to watch this from start to finish.
It is great though. But what I love that they've set up in Star Wars, everyone's just like, because it starts off these kids on a planet and there's like residential rows and then a residential area, and it doesn't feel right. And I love watching like YouTube channels talking about like all the hidden little things and this idea that this planet that they're living on isn't like real in the real sense. Because as soon as they start going out and they're trying to find their way back home, everyone's just like, what are you talking about? That the place where you live is a myth. It's a joke. So like they've been so well hidden in the galaxy for a reason. And they're going to, I think the reveal is going to be great.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. What do you mean? Not like a simulation.
No.
Like they do live in a real planet, but
there's some deep secret about this planet.
That it's been hidden for some reason.
It's been hidden. And they have to almost like fool everyone living there to stop them wanting to leave.
Yeah.
To little Truman, the Truman show-ish.
Yeah. There's that element there.
Because there seems to be some sort of like shield around the planet.
And they can't see the stars.
Yeah. When they first get out, they're like, what are those? Like, they don't know what they see the stars and they don't know what they are.
Okay.
Yeah. But something I really like about it is I was expecting something more like Stranger Things, where Stranger Things is very much a show made by like 80s kids for grown-up 80s kids.
Yes.
It's made for it's a show with kids in it for the sake of like nostalgia.
Yeah.
But it's for adults. It's a very violent, very like intense show.
Yeah.
Whereas this is clearly made for kids. It's still made by like 80s kids in that vein, but it's very much not made for like people who have grown up in the 80s.
Okay.
It's made for like the 80s kids who now have kids. And they want to show it to their
kids. But funny enough, it still has that vibe and feel of the original trilogy.
Yes.
Like the creativity. There's a lot of practical effects. And the sets, very, very little digital compared to like practical effects.
Okay.
Which is...
So a nice return to form in many ways.
Yeah.
Okay.
Such potential.
I'm liking the characters so far.
And are the kids like cool? Do they act well?
Yeah, I think they're pretty good. One of them's a little elephant kid. He's fucking adorable.
Oh, he's my favorite.
Yeah, he's great.
Okay, how many episodes are out?
Two.
Okay.
So they released two.
And this is over on Disney Plus, obviously.
Yeah, I think there's going to be eight, which I hope that's enough.
Have we seen Jude Law yet?
Yes.
And what is he? Who is he?
He's right at the end of the second episode. The kids have been on like a pirate planet and they've been locked up.
I think it was him in the beginning.
I think it is him as well, but I think they're kind of hiding that in in that kids movie way.
He's a pirate Jedi. Yeah,
he's like a former pirate who was like, he's been Jack Sparrowed. He's been like abandoned by his former crew.
Yeah.
And now he sees a way to like tie himself in with these kids who are supposedly from this mythical planet. So I think he's going to try and...
He just sees dollar signs.
Exactly, yeah. I think that's where we're going to go. But he may or may not be a Jedi or have force powers.
But that idea of you have these powers and you either have to be a Jedi or a Sith is crazy.
Yeah,
like imagine just like a normal person trying to work out how you can control these powers and what to do with them. It's an interesting dark Jedi.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm keen.
It's fun.
Sounds good. But
I'm thoroughly enjoying it.
I just love the fact that it is aimed at kids.
Yeah.
And so, that's very cool. Because from rewatching Goonies, you also just realize, like, it's so ridiculous. But it's like, that is the way kids think.
Yes.
That is the way kids act. There is a bit of swearing.
There were some things in that I'm like, how did this pass?
Yeah, they say shit every now and again.
Yeah, you wouldn't do that these days.
Yeah, and apparently in an interview with Josh Brolin, there's a very notable scene in The Goonies, if you've seen it, which is when the big ship is revealed.
Yeah.
This is the last sort of set piece of the movie. Basically, the whole movie is them going in search of this treasure and this ship. They eventually find the ship.
Yeah.
Just happens to be below their house.
Yes.
It's like, it's so fucking ridiculous. But when they come up from the water, they had actually kept that from the kids. They didn't know what that studio looked like.
Cool.
And so their reactions in the movie were their genuine reactions as young actors to sort of see this beautiful ship in a soundstage. And so all their reactions are genuine. Josh Brolin, who was a teenager at the time, gets up out of the water, sees it, and goes, fuck. And they're like, oh, God, we've got to cut that now. And like ruins the take, which I thought was funny. Magic, guys.
Yeah.
Lekker. We got to start thinking about our most rented.
Yes.
Am I not going to read a fact from my book?
Okay, start finding a fact. I hope you've...
I bookmarked it.
You've bookmarked some. But while you pull that up, Gary, and you can also explain what that book is, just to mention, once a year, at the end of the year, as the Video Store, we do our most rented episode, which is us going round in a circle, saying what our favorite film. We do TV as well.
Yeah.
Either film or TV.
Yes.
But like this is literally us narrowing the whole year down to our favorite, which were in theory the most rented items off our shelf.
Yeah.
And it's a good one.
Yeah, it's always a fun
episode. It's always a fun episode, yeah. And it's got everyone in the team together. And it's a nice way to actually look back in time because these years, like, they drag and they shoot by at the same time. It's weird. It's what happens in your late 30s. okay, Gaddy, what is this book that you brought today that you wanted to show us?
I found this book a long, long time ago. It's called The Moviegoer's Companion. It doesn't have a credited writer. This is a think book. It's just like a whole book of random movie facts and stuff.
Okay.
And I found an interesting little subcategory. Films with titles derived from song titles.
Oh. Okay, which is almost every musical biopic.
Yeah.
But I mean, okay, so there's American Pie.
Cool.
Oh, yes.
Sweet Home Alabama.
Sure.
Bad Boys.
Yeah.
Sea of Love.
I don't know what that is.
Neither do I.
One Fine Day.
Yeah.
My Girl.
Good old Macaulay Culkin and the Bees.
Yeah.
Crying Game was a song. Oh. Interesting.
Yeah, it's Culture Club.
Oh.
Yeah, that was a wild swing of a movie.
It says the song is 1964, so the Culture Club song might even be a cover.
Interesting, yeah.
Yeah. Addicted to Love, Keeping the Faith is a song. Interesting. And then Girls Just Want to Have Fun.
Right.
No, that makes sense.
Yes.
You just got to hope you get the rights
to
the song in order to make that movie sort of tie together. But Gaddy, sorry, what is the book? I don't understand.
It's just like a book of movie facts.
Okay, well, hit us with one random other one.
Just flip to a page, see what you find.
On the same one, there's a whole list of the amount of time and words Silent Bob speaks in the Kevin Smith movies.
Okay.
So in Clerks, he has a total of 26 words.
Yeah.
In More Rats, he has 8 words.
Wow.
Chasing Amy, 430 words. He has a whole speech in there. I did that as a drama monologue. Silent Bob speech.
Oh, God.
In Dogma, he says 3 words.
Dogma's making a comeback.
I was about to say, I think they're making
I love that movie.
A sequel.
That is my favorite Kevin Smith movie.
Yeah. No, they're working on a sequel.
Yeah.
And then Jay and Silent Bob strike back. He says 102 words.
Okay.
Yeah, he's not a very silent guy.
Yes.
Yeah.
Thank you for that, Gad.
Yeah.
That both.
It's good. It's good toilet reading.
Yeah, I was about to say that is very pre-smartphone.
Yeah.
Toilet. That's the cuck you look at on
very,
Instagram.
Very. Is it subjective when it's someone's opinion? Is does it?
Yeah. Subjective.
Like 10 greatest villains. Like
okay. According to who?
Who's number one? Who's number one, Gad?
Dr. Hannibal Lecter.
Okay.
Right.
I mean, it's a pretty safe list. Norman Bates, Darth Vader, Wicked Witch of the West, Nurse Ratched.
Yeah, from One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest.
Mr. Potter from It's a Wonderful Life. I would not have put that on my list.
I wanted to screen that.
Right.
It's a Wonderful Life. I think the Bioscope should be doing it.
Yeah. I think you can screen it and not have to pay any rights whatsoever.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, there was a case where they forgot to register the copyright, so all the copyright is gone in that movie.
Oh, okay.
That's why you
coming to the Bioscope this December.
Well, that's why you find like national TV stations in America screen it every Christmas because they don't have to pay the rights for it.
Okay. Now we're definitely going to screen
it. I don't know if it's a specific version because I know they keep on remastering it. I don't know if the rules change, but there's no rights for a particular version of that movie.
Okay.
Yeah.
Interesting. Magic. But listen, thank you guys.
Yeah.
Thanks for a lovely day. It was nice to catch up. It's nice to hear about Skeleton Crew. It's nice to convince you to go and watch Here.
Definitely.
Yeah, I'm going to check that out.
Yeah, no.
Try to see it in the cinema.
You must. You must. Magic. And thanks, everyone. Thanks for a lovely day.
Yeah.
Thanks for wandering in. As we said, our home base is thevideostore.co.za. And we've got a few more epis left in us this year.
Yeah.
We might take a little break, just for a little smidge. A
few weeks.
But we will certainly be back in 2025.
Definitely.
Magic. Okay.
Nice.
See you guys soon.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye.